Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, happy Wednesday, everybody. Chuck Miles, Julie Hayden, Truth Straight Up, brought to you by...
by AmericaCitizenPress.com and Denver Cinegenics and Dr. Julie McCallan. Hey, we're going to have Brian McGlinchey joining us here in a second, as soon as Thomas gets him on the phone. You may remember him if you've listened to our show for a while. He was initially involved in the 28pages.org. That was an organization that was pushing to get the release of information that the government under Bush and every other president really was trying to keep secret about potential
ties
between the Saudi government and the attacks on 9/11. That has been released, but there are thousands and thousands of pages out there from the FBI investigation, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, still under seal and are slowly but surely being released. And so there has been a new, I guess you would call it, document dump with some pretty interesting information. Of course, mainstream media, I guess we like Saudi Arabia now. Sometimes we like them, sometimes we don't. It's hard to tell. But right now, there are not very many organizations looking into this. So thank goodness for Brian McGlinchey.
Other than the PGA Tour.
Other than the PGA Tour, exactly. So we have him with us on the phone. Hey, Brian, thank you for your time this afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
Yeah. So I see you have a new, and I love it because I subscribe to it, and I recommend everyone else does too, on Substack, Stark Realities, where you link all of these documents. But bottom line, as I was explaining, there has been a new document dump, basically, where the FBI, whoopsie, forgot to redact the name of... forgot to redact the name of one of the employees, and there's some interesting ties there. So why don't you explain that?
Yeah. Yeah, it was an enormous document dump over several months. It's pursuant to an executive order that President Biden signed last September. Before you give him too much credit for doing that, he really did it under severe pressure from 9/11 families and survivors who have been waiting decades now, literally. Yeah, we're going on 21 years now to get the full answers about Saudi government links to these attacks. They threatened late August, early September, that if he didn't start releasing material, that they were going to make their displeasure abundantly known and protest his presence at 9/11 memorial events. So, imagine for a politician.
Bad optics.
So he did it out of a good goodness of heart.
You couldn't imagine a worse humiliation, I guess, in that circumstance. So he did sign executive order, and it resulted in more than 900 documents, over 4,000 pages, a lot of late evenings for me pouring through all that material on behalf of your listeners, so they don't have to. And really, what this all ties back to is in the wake of the 9/11 attacks, it became known that there was some very interesting and troubling activity in Southern California and relating to the consulate, the Saudi Arabian consulate in Los Angeles.
Okay.
The first two hijackers to arrive in the United States were Khalid Al-Midar and Nawaf Al-Hazmi, and they arrived in Los Angeles. These are two men who spoke hardly any English. These weren't particularly bright individuals. These were muscle hijackers on the Flight 77 that crashed into the Pentagon. You can imagine if you were just plopped down in a foreign country ahead of pulling off a dreadful but complex in some ways attack. And you didn't speak the native tongue. You weren't acculturated.
Didn't know your way around.
You can imagine that you would need some kind of local support network. And it appears that they did have a local support network, and there's just many, the indications keep stacking up that the officials at the Saudi consulate facilitate that. And One character who emerged early on of great interest was a man named Omar al-Bayoumi.
Okay.
And he lived in San Diego. He was a Saudi Arabian. He had a no-show job with a Saudi aviation company. A ghost, you know, like think about the Sopranos or something.
Right, yeah, right. He was sort of on their books, but didn't actually work there, right?
Exactly. So that's eyebrow raising in itself. One day, he travels from San Diego to Los Angeles, stops at the consulate in Los Angeles, ostensibly to renew his visa. He has a private meeting with somebody there, and then he goes from there. He went to a nearby mosque, and then went to a restaurant where he just happened to encounter the two hijackers.
As one does.
He says he said it was coincidental that he heard them speaking in a Gulf accent and that he just struck up a conversation and then invited them to move to San Diego.
There you go. There you go. What a guy.
Sounds credible. He being sarcastic. So a few days later, off they go to San Diego. He moved them into the same apartment complex where he lived. He facilitated their initial rent payment. He told the apartment complex, I'll back them up if there's anything that happens. I'll take care of it. That kind of thing. Helped him, get started and oriented driver's license. It assigned other people to help him, help these guys get around town and all that type of thing. So that has always been kind of a linchpin in this investigation, is who is this guy? He sure sounds like he might be a Saudi intelligence asset or something if he's got this no-show job in Southern California.
Right.
A lot of people in the community suspected, in the Saudi community in Southern California, even thought that he was a Saudi intelligence asset. He was known for going around videotaping all these people while they're hanging out and that type of thing. So a lot of scrutiny was on who. It goes back to his visit at the Saudi consulate in Los Angeles that preceded that encounter with the hijackers. And this is where a name was let slip in this giant pile of documents. And the name is Mana.
Okay.
M-A-N-A. And Ismail or Smail Mana. And, like I said, I was pouring through documents after documents over and over again. There's a lot of repetition where, these are FBI memorandums, so you're seeing a lot of times copy and paste of material that they've already learned being put into a new one over and over. And then at one point I noticed a paragraph where, the beginning of it's redacted where they say the person's name, but then they say FBI Los Angeles confirmed Mana's current residence.
Oh.
I was like, wait a minute. And then I found another paragraph, where I said that they're repeated a lot, where they didn't miss it, where it's redacted in that same instance.
Right.
So it's clearly an accidental disclosure by the FBI of this individual's name. And so this Mana is the person the FBI concluded that Bayoumi met with at the L.A. consulate. And he's... they identify him as somebody who is known to have extremist views.
Okay. Well, I have like about a million questions. So one, so bottom line, what this is it is linking through the inadvertent revelations of the names. It essentially links people in the Saudi consulate, employees in the Saudi consulate, to people who were connected with the hijackers. So let's clarify for folks, if you work in the Saudi consulate, what's your connection to the government? I mean, are you a government employee? Are you a contractor? I mean, what's the, and I would assume that you're a trusted, you're not just some guy who happened to wander in and say, I want a job here, right?
Right. You'd think that they'd vet them pretty carefully. To my understanding, everybody is an employee of the government of Saudi Arabia. Now, not all of them are people who, flew from Saudi Arabia to take this job and then go back home. Some of them, these will sometimes do local hires, and I believe from my parsing of the language and these memoranda, I believe Mana was a local hire to that consulate. But you're right, it's not. The Saudi Arabian government takes its reputation extremely serious. I mean, any government does, but Saudi Arabia goes next level. That's one reason why they've got people on their embassy staffs here. Their job is, perhaps like part of Omar al-Bayoumi's job, is to monitor Saudi citizens in the United States and keep an eye on them.
So, and that leads into my second question there. What are the odds of this Saudi embassy or consulate employee going rogue and just connecting with people with the hijackers, the 9/11 hijackers, and nobody else knew about it? He just went rogue, so to speak.
That would get you killed.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's really, I don't know what the odds are that it was him alone rogue. No way. Because it's clear from the documents that what we're looking at is a web that goes back from the LA consulate to the Saudi embassy in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
Because in addition to this Smail Mana, who the FBI, you believe, had that meeting with al-Bayoumi, another employee there is Fahad al-Thumairi. He was also considered to be a radical individual. Another one is Mohammed Muhana in the L.A. consulate. And Thumairi and Muhana essentially reported to a man named Musaid al-Jara, who was then director of Islamic affairs at the Saudi embassy in Washington, D.C. And it's not included in my article in any length. I link to a great article by Dan Christensen at the Florida Bulldog on this, on al-Jara. It's hard to write these articles and keep them to a reasonable length because the web and the complexity of it and then the cast of characters is so vast. A 2003 FBI report referring to this Jara back at the Saudi embassy in Washington called him, quote, a controlling, guiding, and directing influence on all aspects of Sunni extremist activity in Southern California, and has been directing, controlling, and funding al-Muhana and al-Thumairi since their arrival in the U.S. It also talks about how they were, one of his roles was selecting which clerics from Saudi Arabia would come over and be assigned, you know, to various mosques within the United States. And this memorandum talks about that he was purposefully selecting Salafi extremists to be assigned in the United States. Getting back to something you said at the outset, you are not hearing about this in the major media.
No.
But could you explain for people, because it's always a fluid situation, the interconnection between the Saudi government and the clerics in Saudi Arabia, which includes lots of the extremists, but they're both backers of them and they are feared enemies of them, and how all that work plays in.
I mean, the relationship between the Saudi royals and the extremists like Al-Qaeda and so forth?
Well, just the clerics themselves. They're government funded, but they also started revolutions and everything else. So they're sort of frenemies in a lot of ways, as I understand it.
Well, yeah, the Saudi government spends untold amounts of its wealth, basically proselytizing and exporting Salafist interpretation of Islam all around the world, all across the United States, Pakistan, Afghanistan, all over. And you do have a sort of a major tension between the Saudi royal family and the Salafists. If Salafism is a pure form, it's a form of Islam that's very much based on self-denial, living simply, and so forth. Think of Osama bin Laden in a cave. He was known to just go out in the desert, even before all of 9/11, and just live out there as a, personal hardship and enduring something, going without water. What I want to contrast that with is, what is your image of the Saudi royalty?
Yeah, not that. Well,
it's the opposite. It's golden toilet seats and mega yachts and that type of thing. And so you've had this the Saudi royals are essentially able to stay in power and be tolerated in that environment because the clerics are very, very powerful. You know, and when Saudi Arabia was founded, it was, you know, through an agreement with the religious aspect of the country. And so one way that they those people to overlook all their lavish lifestyle and so forth is by spending all this money to export that philosophy around the world.
Sort of like the Catholic, the old Catholic tradition of indulgences, I guess. Well, here's, so for folks who've just joined us, we're talking with Brian McGlinchey. He has got a great, postings on Substack at Stark Realities. But so what these newest documents show is a link between Saudi government employees at the consulate in L.A. and people who are connected with the 9/11 hijackers. And what happened is the FBI accidentally failed to redact their name. My big question is, why is the FBI redacting their names in the first place? What does the FBI care? Well, I know why they care, but I want you to talk about this. Why is the FBI trying to keep this information hidden for all of these years?
Well, I mean, the reason attributed where it is properly redacted is, you know, under the Privacy Act. Reason I won't, you know, try to justify. What's really unjustifiable is the fact that for decades now they've been keeping this material under wraps. And
why is that? Do you think?
Yeah, I think it goes back to this toxic relationship that we have with Saudi Arabia that continues even as the United States grows increasingly energy independent, or if we can
or dependent
harness the resources that we have here. We've got this this dynamic where administration after administration, it's this deference and this overarching drive to preserve good relations between the Saudi government and the United States government. You'll have presidential candidates talk very sternly about Saudi Arabia, and then the next thing you know, they're not. I mean, when they get into office, it's another story. Great example of that is Donald Trump during his campaign. Back when we first were acquainted, Chuck and Julie, I was I had a project called 28pages.org,
right,
which was pushing for the declassification of 28 pages on these Saudi government links to the 9/11 attacks. While he was a candidate, he was speaking, and you could imagine my excitement when he said, you know, we shouldn't have invaded Iraq for 9/11, what a total mistake that was. And then he said, it might be Saudi Arabia that knocked those towers down. He goes, there's some secret pages, you know, we're going to find out what's in there. So I was obviously enthused by that attention to the issue. Fast forward to his inauguration, and then he makes his, there's been a long-standing tradition that your first state visit abroad is as a president is either to Mexico or Canada, and he chooses Saudi Arabia. I mean, it's just one more example of how it's relentless.
So much for that. Yeah. Well, how does all of this tie in? Because I know the families of the 9/11 victims are the ones who continue to push for all of this,
they wanted the ability to sue the government of Saudi Arabia to compensate for their losses in 9/11.
And how does all of how does that all of this help their case?
Yeah, I think it helps it enormously. It's been a long road for those families and survivors, and their insurance companies also have an enormous stake. You imagine the insurance company; they're also parties to the lawsuit. So there's a civil suit, a massive, enormously complex suit in the Southern District of New York, where thousands and thousands of plaintiffs, all these family members and so forth, suing the government of Saudi Arabia. These documents are enormously useful to that. A lot of these things that are redacted, they're redacted publicly. The lawyers inside the case, a lot of these documents they've got completely intact. And so, but then they're then sworn to keep these secret and confidential under court order. So I think it's very significant, and especially this last year, the revelation of that name of that individual in Washington, D.C., because now we see ever so more that, getting back to your question, hey, was this just a rogue, somebody going rogue right. in the Saudi consulate. Was it one person or maybe one or two? But now the more you look, the right. more this web keeps growing. And with this latest document dump, back when the 9/11 Commission looked at Omar al-Bayoumi and his shepherding of these two hijackers in San Diego, the obvious question is, hey, is this guy a Saudi intelligence operative? They said, well, they basically didn't conclude they could not confirm that. Well, now these documents come out, and later on in the investigation, which continued after the 9/11 Commission, you see the FBI here without any vagueness saying that they confirmed he was indeed a operative for the Saudi intelligence.
Well, and going back to something that I said and then you touched on, too, the fact that you're not hearing about this anywhere. So let's look at how the corporate media like had total freakouts and meltdowns when that so-called Saudi journalist was killed by the Saudi government. Right. One guy. Right.
Right.
Khashoggi. And now all of a sudden you've got hundreds and hundreds of people killed. And I mean, there's considerable more evidence here that the Saudi government was involved initially than there was initially in the Khashoggi thing. And not nothing, zippo. You'd think that the mainstream media would be like, hey, this is important stuff, right? We hate Saudi Arabia, right? Look what we did to that journalist. I mean, why is that? Why is there crickets on this issue?
We've just evolved to a point, and I guess it's been to this extent, a long way, but it's been getting worse and worse, in that the major corporate media of the United States is effectively an extension of the government. Uh-huh. They take government statements, whether it's about Ukraine, Syria, Afghanistan, they just take them at face value, and they act as not journalists questioning and asking hard questions to power, but basically just being stenographers who just
right.
you know, cite government sources as credible no matter what. And it's even worse because now if you look at the major TV networks, who do they have on their panels when they seek expertise? It's you've got for example Clapper, the former
right.
They're all on the payroll at these networks now. So, I mean, back in, let's say, the 60s and 70s, the CIA would influence the media by cozying up with reporters and that kind of thing. Well, this is beyond their dreams back then. You're in a suit and tie and being paid to have your guys on the network and then speaking.
That's so crazy.
It's really troubling. That's why independent journalism, I think it's so important, and why we've got to do everything we can to support them, and I think and their voice, which is another dynamic, is the stifling of independent journalism by the social media.
Well, yeah, the Ministry of Truth that we have now, too, right? Nina Jankowicz says that people like her should be able to respond to people's tweets and put it in context, like on Wikipedia. It's like, oh, she's the Hunter Biden laptop person, all that kind of stuff. Well, Brian, this has just been interesting, and I appreciate you letting me know. We've got to let you go now. But because as you said, independent journalism is just so important, and that's what you do.
Overarching question. What do you believe the Saudis' role was? Do you think they planned, helped it, anticipated, wanted it to happen, or they inadvertently were kind of cozying up to extremists and then this just blew up in their face?
You know, I really don't know the answer to that. I think there's a history and a pattern, and it's known that the Saudi government, the Saudi royal family, has financed extremism and terrorism around the world. To what extent this was conscious of who is doing that and who is helping these people? And I'm so glad you asked one more question, because one more important point to be made as we connect this web back to Washington, D.C., is that the web goes back to Prince Bandar, the Saudi ambassador to the United States, who was sending money to an extremist in Southern California who was also associated with this group, and to Bayoumi. And that Bayoumi was sharing intelligence information back and forth with reporting to Bandar. And so was Bandar playing a double game here where they're monitoring the terrorists and funding them because he wants to stay on the good side of those extreme elements who might otherwise overthrow the Saudi royals? That's a question. But I mean, the most benevolent explanation you could come up with now is that there was a major thread of extremists inside the Saudi diplomatic corps, and that they helped facilitate 9/11. That's pretty much the most generous explanation, I think, at this point. You know, as this web of names gets bigger and the information we know about the characters gets wider.
Wow. Well, where can Brian, because I know you write on this and all kinds of other things too, as I said, independent journalism. Where can people find you and read you and subscribe to you, as I have?
Yes. Yes, please just come to starkrealities.substack.com. That's starkrealities, plural, .substack.com. You can sign up for free. You can become a supporting subscriber if you, you know, like the work and think it has value. But I'm happy to have you surfing along for free with me and sharing those articles with your friends and so forth. So I'm not even going to bother sharing my social media because pending the return of Elon Musk, at this point, it's almost you won't see what I post there.
Absolutely, and
that's the whole beauty. That's the whole beauty of the Substack model is you sign up, you get the email directly, and you don't have to rely on the thought police to grant permission.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you for your time. Thank you for the work that you do. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you. Great to be with you, too.
All right. Thank you. Take care. Brian McGlinchey there, starkrealities.substack.com. Hey, and this is a good point to remind people, we are also on Substack. It's Chuck and Julie's show on Substack. Would love to have you listen. You can listen to the episodes there. It's the podcast. We put it up there. Also, like Brian, it's free. And you can subscribe and get an email or not. You can just go there too. And I like Substack. I think it's going to be a growing kind of thing. You know what I like about it? There's all kinds of stuff on there, right? It's not, people go, oh, it's become the new conservative thing. No, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff on too. So if you haven't checked that out, it's a great resource. So you want to talk, you watched 2000 Mules.
I did this morning. And I thought it was wonderful. And what it basically does, it sets out a premise that using cell phone
geofencing,
that they prove that 2000 individuals acted, well, they didn't prove it, appear to have acted as mules. They do that by showing they went over dozen times, some cases, from nonprofits over to
government-funded nonprofits.
Sometimes not. They're not
okay. They're not clear. Okay.
And then over to the ballot boxes. Then they show films of mules shoving ballots into the ones. And these are all in states where you can't take any more than yourself and your family. In some cases, not even family, it just has to be yourself. And then they go into also the old age home one. They show some comatose looking people who voted and how they did it and how they get activists in the communities. And sometimes they're simply paid to help get out the vote for the old people. And so it's very effective. Like anything, you know, you always want to see, okay, what's the other side? Being a trial lawyer, you can listen to one side
and you're
guilty. And then you listen to the other side, go away. Maybe it's not all that easy. So there have been a series of articles
fact checking.
One was in the Denver Post the other day by AP, and this is at the end of the thing. This is part of AP's effort to address widely shared misinformation, including work with outside companies and organizations to add factual context to misleading content that is circulating online. Learn more about fact-checking at AP.
Fact-checking. All of those other organizations, by the way, are like Soros-funded. So as I understand it, basically, the AP fact-check was like, oh, geofencing actually doesn't work, even though they all talked about how wonderful it worked during the January 6th thing, right? That's what the FBI used there. So, the response is, well, it could have just been coincidence that the people were going at least 10 times to drop boxes, putting ballots in them with gloves on and going to NGOs, non-government organizations. That could just be coincidence. Right. Never mind the fact that it's illegal to be putting the ballot, you know, more than one. There's videotape, surveillance tape of the people, the mules, putting more than one ballot in, right?
And then they go into, which I thought was very helpful, how do they get these ballots? And then you work by those states who just send out ballots to anyone.
Well, mail ballots.
Well, not all states send them out. Some. Yeah. And you know, various other ways of just, in fact, manufacturing ballots of people who haven't voted in 10 years and all the way through.
I mean, yeah, numerous ways.
Numerous ways. But there was also another one done by the Atlanta Constitutional Journal, which basically similarly said, well, you can't prove they did this. And of course, that was reprinted in the Denver Gazette. Now, the Denver Gazette, if you don't know, is Phil Anschutz's newspaper, which is supposed to give you some context.
Conservative.
They say conservative content. It is no more. It is the Denver Post. I mean, it is. If you listen to the Denver Gazette, you listen to the Denver Post.
Well, and then a couple of things that I want to get to, because what we were talking about earlier before the show, and Dr. Donna is saying, in Colorado, I believe a person can bring 10. Is that a day or is that total? I think that's total, Don. Yeah. Of course, try to get that prosecuted. And then Leo says, always put aluminum foil over your phone for no geofencing. That's true. So, well, yeah, that's a whole other show, right? What they're doing with it. So we, Chuck and I were talking, like, why is it? Because the Truth of Vote people said, well, they took this information to the Republican Party. They took it to Republican attorneys and Republican prosecutors or Republican attorneys general and DAs and stuff. And everybody said, la, 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 busy, busy, call us, you know, in a couple of years. And I was like, why on earth did the Republicans not care about this? And finally, I thought to myself, the Democrats don't care because they want to keep doing it, right? This is their plan. The Rhino establishment Republicans don't care because this supports Trump. Anything that vindicates or supports Trump, they are against. So the last thing they want to do, and they don't care if that means that we're going to lose every election from now to eternity because of the ballot harvesting.
It's not losing the election, they're afraid of. It's losing control of one of the two parties. As long as they control one of the parties, no matter how badly you do in the elections, you're always going to have to be dealt with, and you can always be given crumbs by the Democrats. And in Colorado, that's what the Republicans do. They search endlessly out for crumbs.
Well, and so that's, I mean, but I think that's got to be the only explanation, right? Why? Because if you watch this documentary, and again, and we can get into Tina Peters, they call people like that, they would call us election deniers. And you can't deny this information. And yet nobody, I mean, the AP just dismisses it and they just make up why it's not right. I mean, they're just lying about that. But everybody else from really Fox News, I mean, it's astonishing that Tucker Carlson show said they could have Catherine Engelbrecht on to talk about it, but couldn't mention the documentary, which is weird. You haven't heard.
Except if you know where Fox really comes from.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah. I mean, you got to wonder what kind of battle was that with Tucker Carlson. Right. You know, you don't know, was he a good guy willing to say, you know, say, okay, look, I'll make whatever promises I need to. I want to get this information out. But why would the Republican Party deny, they're the deniers, right? Denying that there's anything going on when there's clearly stuff going on. And it's got to be just because if it helps Trump or if it vindicates Trump, if it vindicates Trump supporters, they are opposed to it. And if that puts them on the same side as the Democrats, they're okay with that. Like what, sending $40 billion to Ukraine? More than even they asked. Like, let's just send you another, oh, I don't mean to keep going, another $7
billion. Just add it again.
Yeah, another $7 billion. I mean,
pushing, shoving.
Yeah, no one is saying, you know, we can't have baby formula. Oh, as an aside, I saw a really funny tweet. They saw somebody had a picture of this baby in camouflage saying babies are disguising themselves as Ukrainians in order to get baby formula sent to them and money. But I mean, do you think that's why? Because from what you said, and I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but everybody that we have heard from or has talked about this or commented on it says that the 2,000 mules is even more powerful than you would think. That it's
yes, and it's more provable than you think.
Right.
I was always afraid that you say, well, you'll never know. They have every person of those 2,000 mules, who they are, where they live. Anybody, any DA, U.S. attorney, district attorney could easily take that, get a grand jury, and start hauling in.
Ask them.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's what you want to do on the road.
Well, but I mean, that's where AP's thing falls apart. It's like, well, it could just be coincident. So if I'm an investigator, you'd be like, I mean, look what they've done to Donald Trump. Look what they're doing with January 6th, right? Yeah. People could say, well, it's just a coincidence that my cell phone thing was at the state capitol. I wasn't anywhere near. No, they put him in jail for over a year on misdemeanor charges, right? But the AP, it's I mean, their whole argument falls apart. It's like, maybe. I doubt it, but maybe. But let's go ask the person, like you said, convene a grand jury, drag the people in and say, what are you doing?
And if you do, and they say, well, okay, I got paid. And they say, who by? And, you know, you just work up the chain. It's obvious they're not interested in that. And it's interesting, you know, I think we brought out in Michigan,
right,
like Colorado, they had an assembly, although theirs was the final stage of the nominating process, where attorney general and a secretary of state candidates were Trump candidates. And there's a big article in Gateway about everybody in the Republican Party establishment is freezing them out. They won't. They're making sure none of their donors give them any money. Other elected officials not call them all the way through. And they had a beautiful line. I'm not sure I have it up here, but it's what we've said in Colorado. They say unity, but they only mean unity where it's one of their candidates gets elected. And if it's not, or nominated, it's not, then they cut you off totally. And that's what Dick Wadhams does. And Dick Wadhams said, you know, our party's over if these, whose party?
Election deniers. What party, you know? Right. Well, and again, and it's election deniers because this just drives me crazy. They're calling him. You got to say to Dick Wadhams, did you watch this? Just watch 2,000 Mules. And you point out, well, we're missing something, right? You point out what the denial is all about. And here's some of the comments from Leo, Julie, straight, correct on as long as it's against Trump. And then he has an idea since Stephen Colbert is sick again with COVID, maybe they could run 2,000 Mules during his slot. And then Dr. Donna on the baby formula had an issue with the FDA recalling it. And when the U.S. went to not keeping or making back stock, it ran out, waiting for the FDA to approve. It's been 3 months. Yeah, that's a whole mess. And that's a whole other, you know, kind of side thing. But we wanted to talk a little bit about, it is interesting because you've been kind of on this, the Civil War, it's not just in Colorado.
You're pointing out Michigan, pointing out in West Virginia, they had the election last night and Trump won one and lost one, but he won the more important one and won in West Virginia between two Republicans that they had. West Virginia lost one of its seats, so two Republicans had to face it off to be the congressional one from the northern part of the state. The establishment guy named McKinley had the support of just about every establishment wing could be. The West Virginia Chamber of Commerce, U.S. Chamber of Commerce, they had the governor, who's a Republican. They had the Council of Industry. They had the Oil and Gas Industry Association. I mean, just go down the list of every major statewide organization. All were behind. In addition, Manchin, the Democratic senator, cut a 30-second ad for McKinley.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't know. Maybe it'd be good. And so he had support of every politician, everyone but Trump. And Trump's nomination. But, you know, it's really a falsity to say that Trump's nomination got him in. What it was Trump's underwriting reason, because this guy had taken one of the 13 Republicans out of 200 or so, had voted for the infrastructure bill that allowed Biden to, you know,
destroy
the economy, increase inflation, everything else. And this whole thing says, I voted for Virginia, you know, hell with the country, hell with everything else. And in the end, the grassroots guy, I'm not sure he's grassroots, but pro-Trump guy, Mooney, won by 20 points. I mean, 20 points.
That's like
massive.
A lot. Right.
That's massive people, when you have everything on one side and just the logic and Trump's support on the other.
I think people are, and I think the economy has a lot to do with this, and the, you know, the horrible economy, is I think people are sick of the establishment, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, right? And the people in power. And as we said, you know, they just want power, so they don't care. And, you know, you look at Ukraine, right? I don't think, if you were to ask American people, it's like, do we support Ukraine? Okay, yeah, I stand with Ukraine. But should we be sending $40 billion to Ukraine? I mean, because it's only been 10 weeks. I mean, how many billion? I mean,
that is to go to the pensions and the salaries. And
yeah. And here's
10% for the big guy.
And since we've sent Ukraine so much equipment, what, in 10 weeks, that we don't even have enough equipment of our own. I mean, people get, at least I hope people get, that there are some people who benefit from this $40 billion that Mitch McConnell pushed to it, equally with the Democrats and Joe Biden, right? That, I mean, it goes to the military-industrial complex. Those people donate to campaigns. They, you know, help people like Mitch McConnell stay in power. So they're happy to send them $40 billion.
Well, only 87 Republicans in the House, I assume it was all Republicans, maybe it was an odd Democratic one or two, voted against it. And that shows you the uniparty thing, just, you know, the weapons industry, it had, was really feeling bad after Afghan, and that had been their milk cow for 20 years. And now all of a sudden that was gone. They weren't in Iraq. And so this is a godsend. Oh, no.
Well, and how long is it going to keep up, right? It doesn't
hopefully
have
doesn't,
the appearance. I mean, you got the feeling that the Biden administration and the Republicans, the swamp Republicans, to be like, this should go. I mean, this could be another Afghanistan, Vietnam, or we can just keep sending stuff over there and money over there forever. I mean, to heck with the United States economy, to heck with, yeah. You know, they're talking about in Colorado, it's going to be on the ballot possibly, which I think is a bad idea, but giving all Colorado kids free school lunches, right?
Oh, sure.
So they're asking voters to do that. It's like, wait a minute, if we can send $40 billion to Ukraine, right, to help with their pensions and feed their kids, maybe we could feed our own kids. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But again, you got to look at who benefits, not the American people, but some of these, the lobbyists and the consultants and the military, again, the military industrial complex.
And there's no party against this. Uniparty, right. And the only one against it is whatever remains of the Trump ones. And so, you know, the Pennsylvania people said, we don't like Oz. Well, Oz is not perfect. But the other guy is worse, and he won't support election integrity. And the third one's a woman who can't win statewide. So it's you know, the more I look into Trump's endorsements, they're not as quite as just whimsical.
Whimsical as you would think. Okay, yeah. And this is from Charlene. Intellectual dishonesty in the part of the rhinos. McConnell and Graham deep into Ukraine, hoping we won't notice. Exactly. And she says, this is true, Charlene. Ukraine might be our 51st state. Might as well be. And then Dr. Donna, how many U.S. citizens are now struggling and sending money where for what? Well, exactly. And, you know, Biden basically has zero plans to deal with inflation. I suspect because he really can't. I mean, things have taken on a life of their own now. I think gasoline, diesel reached the highest point yet again. So that's going to result in higher grocery prices. I mean, consumer price index, they're trying to spin it. It wasn't as bad. It was worse than they thought, but it wasn't as bad as last month. But that was before there was this brief period in April where gas prices went down a little bit. So that's what helped. But now they're up higher than ever before. So I, you know, but it, so he has no plan to deal with all of that. But hey, we can keep sending money to Ukraine. And you notice how dangerous can it be there, right? What is the deal? So you've got Nancy Pelosi, who's, you know, visits
Warrior Zelensky. Combat woman.
Yeah, you two is doing concerts from there. Everybody and their mother, you know, Chuck and I are going to go visit Zelensky, and we'll take a group of our loyal listeners with us too.
Yes, yes.
I mean, it's like everybody and their mother is visiting Zelensky, right?
Right, right, right. And it'd be fun. So we'll do that.
Yeah, we'll
sign
do that.
Up on our website.
What else would we want to talk about today? Two things, kind of local Colorado. It's the last day of the legislative session. And if you read some of the, even like the Colorado Sun, Colorado Politics, it all it's doing is attacking Republicans like Dave Williams, Stephanie Luck, Ron Hanks, Patrick Neville for holding lengthy debates to try to prevent the Democrats from passing policy. They say that Republicans are focusing on obstructionism not policymaking.
No.
Yeah. Policies like, you know, you can't talk on your cell phone while you're driving. I mean, you know, that like, all kinds of, you know, unionizing all kinds of government workers. I mean, all of it, you know, fentanyl, that's even though we have high, you know, skyrocketing fentanyl deaths, the Democrats want to water it down and make it only a crime if you have not a crime, if you have to have a little teeny bit, enough to kill people. But I mean, all of these terrible policies. And I say thank God for people like Dave Williams and Ron Hanks.
What do you mean you have an opposition? They don't just go, as long as, you know, you pay my uncle some money, I'll vote for it. I mean, it's and you've got the leadership in the Republican Party now are just total rhinos. And, you know, Ken Buck, our former chairman, I mean, he got 38% of the assembly vote, even the guy just nominated from the floor.
And here's the thing, you know, that the Republicans point out, and I'll give Hugh McCain did give him, I mean, he did point this out too. He's not being a total squish. At least on this, the last day of the legislature, but he's like saying, hey, Democrats, you control the calendar, right? You're the ones who wait. Because I guess the person who's in charge of the Democrat calendar is working from home in Pueblo. So we've seen how
we're
that
Harvard.
Goes. Working hard. Yeah, she's got these frantic calls. And she's like walking her dog. No, I don't know that. But
Somebody
I mean, She's got to take her nap and do her yoga. But I mean, they're the ones in control. And even the Republicans are saying, hey, it's not our fault that the Democrats had these crucial bills that they waited till the last second to try to get through. And they're saying, well, maybe we could have a special session. And then they say that every year. And so this Colorado Sun was doing all of these terrible bills that had been killed and had to give up because of those obstructionist Republicans. So, you know, again, I think the Republicans, we got to fight fire with fire, so to speak. And if the Democrats are going to do this.
Well, it's unequal fire, I can tell you that.
Well, and here's and the other thing, too, that happened today, I wanted to talk about a lot of kind of local stuff. So Tina Peters, election denier, a judge ruled that the duly elected clerk and recorder of Mesa County is not going to be able to run the primary election, Republican primary election, both primary elections in June or the general election, because she's been, well, they didn't even really say why she's been charged with these bogus crimes, right? It's just, they keep saying.
Well, normally she wouldn't be able to do the general because she's in the general or maybe in the general, but they don't care. I mean, and once again, as we faced with our open primary one and where we got a Democratic judge, Kane, Steve Williams, I tried to advise Steve, said, well, you know, Chuck, honestly, I want to know, because what do you think of my chances of winning? And I said, well, technically, if you can prove that it's your nickname, you would appear to fit under, but you'll be in front of a Democratic judge because there are no judges. Man. They're not Republicans. The Republicans are only senior status. I don't think there are any active judges left. So no matter where you go, kind of a judge, a Democratic judge, and the judiciary is just as corrupt and just as tainted as any other.
Well, we saw that with Dave, let's go Brandon Williams, right? He wanted to use a nickname, and the judge said, well, he did prove it was a nickname, and the law does say he should be able to use it, but I'm not going to let him. We're just going to let Jenna Griswold do this. Here's some of the comments. Back to the free lunch thing from Steve, Don, Stephen, Donna, every politician wants a free lunch, and they're all on the government tit and owned by special interests. And then somebody, I forget where, oh, Charlene, this is true. The rhinos have imprisoned us. We have to break out. Who ruled what with Tina? That was a federal judge. I'm not sure what judge. Jenna Griswold, Charlene, was suing to prevent Tina Peters from running the election, and the judge agreed with her. Now, keep in mind, Tina Peters was elected by the people of Mesa County. So who is Jenna Griswold? Well, those stupid people of Mesa County, right?
Well, Wayne Williams
did. Yeah. I mean, it's like if the people of Mesa County didn't want Tina Peters to be running their election, they could recall her. They could have not voted for her. They have all kinds of options. But Jenna Griswold asking a judge to just step in and say, no, she can't do it.
And do Wayne Williams, who's a rhino from El Paso.
Right. And on the lunch, I'm going to just weigh in on the free lunch thing, right? So what happened is for the past COVID thing, the kids were in and out of school so much that I'm not so sure how much difference it made. But for the past year, the kids have been getting free lunch at school. Okay. Now Rev gets, because he likes their lunches, right? and it's really cheap. I forget how much it is, but we pay. But if you qualify, you can get a free lunch. So there are no kids going, right? There are no kids who are ever going hungry.
If both your parents are registered Democrats, you get the free lunch.
You get the free lunch. No, I mean, no kids are going hungry. And there has been plenty of free lunch programs, including free lunch programs that last for the summer for the kids who are on the free lunch programs, right?
Free.
But so the Democrats, though, want to basically limit the amount of deductions. They call it that rich people, but it's people making a couple making $300,000. Now, that's doing OK, but that's not what I would call rich. We're not in Elon Musk territory. So they want to limit their deductions and then take, I'm not sure how this works, but take the money from that and have Colorado continue paying for free lunches.
Free.
Now, it's the kind of thing that sounds good, but again.
No, it doesn't sound
good. Well, number one, that gives them, again, more control over what the kids eat, right? Mm-hmm. And what they're going to feed them. I mean, hopefully Michelle Obama won't get in there very much, but I mean,
she has to test everything.
It's one of those stupid things that they put on the ballot. And I got to wonder, because the Democrats are sneaky about this, if they think that might drive people to the ballot, things like that.
They don't drive people to the ballot. They rigged the ballot already.
They don't need to do that.
You keep on thinking. And that was another good thing about 2000 Mules. They said, Republicans worrying about the campaign. They worry about, you know, standing on the bridge, waving signs and, and having hula hoops and how to move the hula hoops when you're walking down the parade and everything else. The Democrats worry about the process of voting. And so they go to the old age homes and they pay off, or they get activists to fill in all the ballots. They don't sit on top of bridges waving signs.
They don't worry
signs.
About enthusiasm, no. And they're all paid. I mean, the 2000 Mules people pointed out that a lot of the mules that they saw also participated in Antifa riots and right. things like that. So, I mean, a lot of coincidences there. But anyway, back to the school lunch. I will, for one, if they put on the ballot, which it looks like they're going to, be voting no on that. Any kid,
who cares how you vote?
Any kid, well, all right. Yeah. Any kid who needs a free lunch in Colorado has a free lunch, and the rest of us can afford the minimal cost for the lunches there. And it's just another one. They just want to get you more and more and more dependent on the government. So now the government is feeding your kid. Meanwhile, well, of course, unless it's a baby, right? If it's a baby, you can't get baby formula. But if it's, and you know, there's some scam involved in this. There's probably some, the people who sell the food to the schools for the school lunches, you know, you just know that somewhere somebody's getting
all
a kickback there.
No.
Yeah. These people are like, yeah, we need that on the ballot. So we have every kid in the school eating the free lunch, right?
And we'll get them a little bit of fentanyl just to get them used to the stuff. I mean,
yeah, exactly. And Rev points out of the supply chain crisis, the ice cream has not been very good with the school lunch. So unfortunately, Michelle Obama does not seem to have intervened in his school.
Well, she'll be there soon.
Hey, that's going to wrap it up for us today. Remember, you can get all of our podcast links to, we're on everything. We're on Substack, Rumble, iHeart, Apple, iTunes, Google, Alexa.
And we've been banned from the rest. So.
Yeah, we're on everything that we haven't been banned on. So,
right. You can, and we're going to have Ron Hanks, hopefully. The session's over, so hope to have him on Friday, and we can find out what great support he's getting from the Republican
and
Party.
Another guest too, Robert Spencer. He's ahead of Jihad Watch, but he's been doing a lot of great writing in PJ Media. You would be surprised when you think about what is the number one, the leading cause of death in America. You might think, oh, heart disease, cancer, gun, whatever, right? No, according to the head of the FDA, this is for real. This is not a joke. The number one cause of death in America is
misinformation.
Yeah,
get that right, Julie.
And so we're going to be talking with Robert Spencer. He has a great, who knew? So Robert Spencer is going to be talking about
Lucky AP is working on it, so
that's
we'll be better off. All right, everybody, have a great day, and we'll see you on Party Friday.